The Book Club at 91.7. I'm Mark Purcell. Thanks for tuning in. It's a U.S. National Historic Landmark at the second largest cemetery in the country. Cincinnati's Spring Grove Cemetery and Arboretum is the resting place of thousands. And its monuments and tombs, landscaped gardens and groves have been a draw to citizens since 1844. Joining me with a few of the stories he's collected and shared in his book, Stories in the Grove, published by Orange Fraser Press, is Phil Nuxall. Phil, welcome to the Book Club at 91.7.
I'm so excited to be here. This is wonderful.
Well, you started out with a photography book, Beauty in the Grove,
yes, and then
you now have Stories in the Grove. What is your fascination with old cemeteries?
My fascination with old cemeteries, it's actually more about the art and the stories, actually. You know, when I first got involved with historic cemeteries, Spring Grove Cemetery and Arboretum specifically, I was intrigued by all of the visual wonder that's there. You know, things that people just walk by or they don't pay any attention to. The iconography, symbolism, all of that stuff. And then I started getting more interested in the people who are interred there. And then I wanted to know more about them. And that's how Stories in the Grove kind of evolved. You know, I collected all of these stories for the past, oh my gosh, probably 10 or 11 years, and I had to share them because everybody needs to know these stories. They're amazing.
Well, how many people are buried in Spring Grove Cemetery?
We have over 220,000.
Wow.
Yeah, with room for many, many more for like 350 to 500 years.
So that's a lot of stories, and I understand that when you say in the book, you talk about how many stories, you know, you had that you brought to your publisher, and she goes, you have to whittle this down a little
bit. Yeah, from 600.
600?
I had a list of 600 book-worthy stories that I, like you said, I had to whittle them down to 100. And the cool thing is my publisher kept adding additional ones. So we ended up with 115. You know, it would like she'd call up and say, oh, we have to include this story now, even though we weren't going to originally. And that's a wonderful, wonderful thing to deal with.
Well, the stories in your new book are not just about people. You cover some of the monuments and mausoleums, too. But I want to start with a couple of stories, beginning with Adolf Strauch, who's the man most responsible for how Spring Grove looks today. Tell us about
Adolf. Man.
Dumb man.
Yeah, because Adolf Strauch, who came from Prussia by accident, he missed his train going up to Niagara Falls, ended up staying in Cincinnati, and ended up landscaping Robert Bowler's estate, which is Mount Storm, where Mount Storm Park is. So when he came over here, he was the first person in America to get rid of all of the visual clutter, all of the little knickknacks that Victorian cemeteries were so famous for, because they like to put all this extra stuff on their burial lots. And Adolf Strauch was the first person that realized it's too much. We need to clear this out. We need to clear our senses and our brain out and not have so much clutter. And that is why when you go to Spring Grove today, you kind of question yourself as to whether or not you're really in a cemetery or a park. Mm-hmm. It's a beautiful blend of park and cemetery that started with Adolf Strauch's landscaped lawn plan of design for cemeteries.
And that's you were mentioning the Victorians. They like to put up fences around their
loved
one's grave. So that you can imagine if you put 200,000 people buried in Spring Grove, 200,000 sets of fences.
You know,
that would not be fun.
That would be a mess. Yeah.
Well, in the book, you mention you're often asked, who was the first person that was buried in Spring Grove? And explain why that's a hard question to answer.
Yes, because it's quite common when you look through old cemetery records to come across a lot of misspelled names. The dates are wrong. They just, you know, depending on who was entering the information, they didn't always take the time to, you know, they weren't into accuracy so much. So when I wanted to know who was the very first person to be buried in Spring Grove, initially it looked like it was two sisters, last name Brisbane. and they were interred in Spring Grove, but 20 years, this was in 1844, but 20 years afterwards, they were reinterred, you know, dug up and moved to Arena, Wisconsin. So they are no longer in the Grove.
Right.
But if you go into the records, there's a person listed as the first burial, and it was a mistake. It wasn't supposed to be a one. It was supposed to be something like a seven. So I had to get past that error and finally came to the conclusion that it was Martha Louisa Ernst of the Ernst family that was the first to be buried in Spring Grove that's still buried there not dug up and taken somewhere else.
Phil Nuxall, author of Phil Nuxall's Stories in the Grove, here on the Book Club at 91.7. And how did Spring Grove come about back in the mid-1800s?
Well, citizens were tired of having no options to bury their loved ones other than small, cramped, cluttered graveyards in the downtown area. You come out of Music Hall after a wonderful concert, which I'm going to Thursday night with the symphony. You look at Washington Park. Imagine in the 1800s, there were three cemeteries there. You know, it wasn't a park. They were cemeteries. So people in Cincinnati really wanted to create a place of beauty to rest in eternity, as we say. And it was members of the Cincinnati Horticultural Society that got together and were the first ones to come up with the idea to create a beautiful place out in the country. And where Spring Grove is now used to be out in the country.
I was going to say, yes.
Definitely.
I mean, downtown where we're sitting right now was out in the country
yeah.
to some degree
yeah,
back
you're
in
right.
the mid-1800s.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
For sure. So along the way, 200,000 people plus buried in Spring Grove Cemetery. Mm-hmm. And as you said, just stories galore. Let's pull a couple out of the book. Tony Sarg, the man who put together the Macy's Parade balloons that
yeah,
we see every Thanksgiving.
Yeah, he made the very first hot air balloon for Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade. And now, how do I know that? Because my friend Susan Olson is the historian for Greenwood Cemetery in the Bronx in New York. A good friend of mine, she gave me a fabulous tour a few years ago. And she called me one day, and she wanted to know where Tony Sarg was buried in Spring Grove. And my first reaction was, who's Tony Sarg? Never heard of him. She said, well, he made the first hot air balloon for Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade. And I almost dropped the phone. Like, you've got to be kidding me. And sure enough, he is buried in Spring Grove. He was also a puppeteer, known as one of the greatest puppeteers, at one time. My favorite story within a story is when one of the first hot air balloons got away from the handlers, and they didn't know where it ended up. Well, it ended up somewhere over in Long Island in a pond or a lake. And when the people who lived in the area saw it, and I guess they just saw like the top. It was a dragon.
Oh, a dragon.
Yeah. So they just saw the top. I don't know what you call those things, horns or whatever on the top of the dragon, peeping out of the water. And it was a Loch Ness monster type of scenario. They were like freaking out, like, oh my gosh.
Monster.
Yeah. Isn't that great?
That's great. Well, some of these stories are interesting. I mean, there are Civil War soldiers who are buried there. There are a Titanic survivor.
Martha Stone. Mm-hmm.
And the man who invented the oven window.
Yeah. Ernst Hunnefeld. Imagine making your Thanksgiving turkey in your oven and you can't see inside the oven, and you have to constantly open that door, let the heat out. He invented the first successful glass oven door. So apparently someone had tried it before and was unsuccessful, and I would not have wanted to be in that kitchen.
No, not at all.
Yeah, lots of inventors in the Grove.
Well, I mentioned, how the monuments and mausoleums, you tell stories about them as well. Talk about the story of the Dexter Mausoleum.
The Dexter Mausoleum and Chapel is a private family mausoleum and chapel that was built by the Dexter family, who made their fortune in Kentucky whiskey. and lost their fortune before this structure was finished. Now, this is a phenomenal Gothic Victorian mausoleum and chapel that is so grandiose and so large that everybody thinks it's Spring Grove's official chapel.
Right.
But it's family-owned. It was designed by James Keyes Wilson, who also designed our historic office up front and the little gatehouse, you know, when you enter. Oh, my gosh. It was modeled after Saint-Chapelle in Paris, France. And if you've been there, you know how narrow and tall it is.
Yes.
And you can see that in the Dexter. It's just like a miniature version of that. Interesting about this structure. For years and years and years, I was told that the 14-foot steeple that used to rest on the roof fell off over 50 years ago into the lake. And I've always thought, well, where is it still in the lake? What? I don't understand this. A friend of mine found an article in an old Inquirer talking about a lightning strike that struck that steeple and it shattered into pieces, and the impact was so great that it blew out the windows, and apparently the front doors, which were wooden, were like, you know, exploded. And it mentions, you know, very eloquently about this Victorian lady who was standing in front of the front doors. It looked like a porcupine with no. splinters. Isn't that horrible?
Ooh.
But now I know what happened to the steeple. I mean, you know, that's another great story.
Well, and I love how you talk about how everyone wants to go inside, but
yeah,
no one can.
It's frustrating. Well, we're in the process of hopefully coming up with some strategies to raise funds, maybe grants, whatever, so that we can restore the Dexter, because it's in very, very poor condition, and it's dangerous to go inside. It really is. I mean, even employees can't go inside anymore.
Well, among the other stories is how Hamilton, Ohio was known as Little Chicago.
Yeah. Who knew?
Who actually knew?
I did know that because I have a lot of friends who are jazz artists, you know, Dave Ballou for one. And I think they've had music series recently, and it's called like the Little Chicago series, something to that effect.
Really?
Yeah. But yeah, there were some pretty shady characters there.
What's your favorite story out of the 115 or so that you put in stories in the Grove?
Wow.
Do you have one that really, you know, you always
daily.
Have one?
It changes
115 to choose from.
Yeah. I love Caldonia. You know, I've talked about her before. You know, she was a character who would put tap shoes on at moment's notice downtown on the sidewalks and do a tap dance. And, you know, turns out she was in the original Cotton Club, and the song Caldonia was supposedly written about her.
Fascinating story, yes.
Yeah.
Well, okay, I'll ask this a different way.
Sure.
So, what story are you most often asked about when you go out in public and do signings? Is there anyone that, you know, you're constantly having to retell?
Right. Superman.
Oh, yes.
George Reeves, who was not buried in Spring Grove. He visited after he died because his mother had his body sent to Spring Grove. We kept him in the White Pine Chapel for a few weeks. And during that process of time, or that period of time, the mother discovered that there wasn't enough room on her family lot to have a private mausoleum built for, as she said in a telegram, her son, Superman. Okay, Whoa. So his maternal grandparents are indeed buried in Spring Grove, but he got shipped back to California.
Yeah.
Darn.
Johnny Appleseed was also not buried in Spring Grove.
Exactly. People just assume that he's there because we have a beautiful bronze statue towards the back of a cemetery, and that was commissioned by Spring Grove just to honor all of his wonderful work, you know, in horticulture, and, you know, he was, you know, a pretty good guy. So, yeah, he's in, I think he's in Fort Wayne, Indiana.
So you will be at Books by the Banks today at the Duke Energy Convention Center.
I'm so excited to be back at Books by the Banks.
Yeah, it must be interesting. Tell us what it's like from the author's side of the table.
Well, I've only done it once before with Beauty in the Grove, and I was so impressed with how organized it is. I mean, there are over 100 authors that will be appearing there. So the organization was impressive. I was so stunned at how many people came to my booth and had me sign their books. So, you know, we did really well sales-wise. But I just enjoyed meeting, you know, so many new people, you know, new friends and whatsoever, and talking with other fellow authors, especially Cincinnati authors. Dan Woolert, you know, with the wonderful Cincinnati chili history book.
Mm-hmm.
People like that.
A lot of fun.
Well, and I'm going to be on a panel discussion this year. I'm real happy about that.
Good. Well, thank you for all the stories and stories in the Grove, too.
Thank you, Mark. I really appreciate it.
Phil Nuxall's Stories in the Grove here on the Book Club at 91.7. It's published by Orange Fraser Press. And as mentioned, Phil will be at Books by the Banks later on today. WVXU media partner for Books by the Banks.
Is there a book or author you'd like to hear on the Book Club at 91.7? Or are you a local author with a book you'd like to share? Just email us. The address is easy to remember. book@wvxu.org. book@wvxu.org. We'll take your suggestions to heart and see what can be arranged. But remember, as Frank Zappa said, so many books, so little time. No promises, but we'll do the best we can. Drop us an email, book@wvxu.org. And thanks.
Following a dream, he and his wife opened a restaurant in Over the Rhine selling fancy hot dogs. It's been hard to get a seat there ever since. Dan Wright and his wife Lana share their story and the new cookbook, Senate, Street and Savory, just ahead on the Book Club at 91.7.